Good morning.
Morning.
So let's start with the numbers. The good news is that the downward trends nationally and statewide and on the Olympic Peninsula continue. So there's been a 41% drop nationally in COVID cases, comparable drops in death rates. Actually, the death rate's down 22%. Hospitalization rates are down, and yet it's still sobering that currently there are over 485,000 confirmed deaths from COVID in the U.S., and we think there's been over 27 million cases in the U.S. Washington State's case decline has been even more dramatic than nationally, with a 58% decrease in the last 2 weeks. We're now averaging about 670 cases per day, and the case rate in the state is at 259 per 100,000, and 6.3% positivity, which is still very high, but lower than it's been any time since late October, early November. Jefferson County, we had 15 cases in the first week in February, but only six last week. So our case rate has dropped to about 66 per 100,000. That's almost half of what it was the week before. And if you go by the average cases per day, which is what the New York Times uses in ranking counties, now Jefferson County is now one of the lowest counties in Washington State in terms of having on average one case per day. And our positivity is at 3.4%. Clallam County is at 62 per 100,000 with 2.4% positivity, so even a little lower than Jefferson. Kitsap is at 112 per 100,000 and 5.1%, and again, lower than they have been recently. And then Mason County is 105 cases per 100,000 and 4.9%. And this data and some other measures is why under the Roadmap to Recovery plan, this area has moved from phase one to phase two. Vaccination rates are steadily increasing, really at this point limited only by supply. We've solved the problems in terms of getting people using the vaccine we get, but the amount of vaccine that's being produced is now the rate limiting step. The U.S. is up to about 1.1 million vaccinations per day, and there's been over a million vaccines that have been given in Washington State so far, and we're nearing 8,000 vaccinations that have been given in Jefferson County, and about 85% of those by Jefferson Healthcare, and then the rest by pharmacies. As I think we've reported on in the past, we're finalizing our plans to be ready when we get increased vaccine supplies to deliver it rapidly. And we think that that's going to be in March and beyond. But with each month, the vaccine supply issues will improve. But it's realistically, it's not going to be till April or May at the earliest, before it really opens up and people who want to get vaccinated will find it relatively easy to be vaccinated. And the big surge in vaccine production, May or June. And at that time, it'll be very easy. You'll be able to get vaccinated in a number of different venues. But we'll still...
Um,
You're cutting out there.
I did. Supported.
You were cutting out there, Dr. Locke. I'm not sure why, but if you continue to cut out, maybe just join audio only.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's see. How is it now?
It's good.
I'm good.
Okay, yeah, I can turn off the camera if it deteriorates. You're looking at all this data. We are at a really decisive fork in the road right now, in the sense that we could, if we do everything right, we can head into a kind of a stable period where we get low case rates and we can hold them there with testing and isolation and quarantine, or we could head into a fourth wave and have a surge upon a surge. And I think Tom Fried, who is one of the, what was the former director at the CDC, said it well. He said, whether we have a fourth surge is up to us, and the stakes couldn't be higher. And specifically, what we need to be doing is not relaxing our guard, but really intensifying what we're doing, especially in terms of masking. The CDC just about a week ago came out with their long-awaited updates on masking, and they tested a lot of different masks. There's a lot of data on their website for people who are interested in the details. But the real take-home message is that the quality and the fit of masking are very so quality, well-fitting masks are very effective if both parties are wearing them. So the person who has the asymptomatic infection and the person that they might be exposed to, if they both have well-fitting masks on, the protection rate is very high. It's over 90% reduction in risk. But if either of them, if the source case is unmasked, there's not a lot of protection from wearing anything less than an N95 mask in that kind of setting. So it's crucial that everyone be masked, because we're pretty certain now that about 60% of transmission of COVID-19 is from people who are asymptomatic. Who they're either they're pre-symptomatic, they will eventually develop symptoms, but they're shedding virus for a couple days before that, or that they will have completely asymptomatic infection. So the key to preventing that transmission, which is the predominant form of transmission, is everyone wear a mask all the time when they're in non-household settings and indoor spaces. That's absolutely critical. Double masking is an effective strategy. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the outer cloth mask helps the inner surgical mask fit better. But high quality cloth masks can be very effective as well. So I'm really encouraging people to invest in good quality masks at this time. They're worth it. And those are at least three layers is even better. And they should be a very tight weave. You should not be able to see light between the weave of your mask. And then the final point I'd say is that continued testing is really important. We're seeing a drop-off of testing nationally and at the state level, not so much locally, but nationally at state level. And some of that reflects declining case rates, but we're concerned that people are less motivated to get tested. And that could be a huge mistake. If people who develop symptoms do not get tested for COVID-19, because we are seeing virtually no influenza in Washington State right now. Masking and distancing has essentially caused, we are in all likelihood going to skip a flu year or a flu season this year in Washington, and that's good news. And there's not a lot of other respiratory viruses going around either. So people who develop fever with respiratory symptoms have to regard themselves as being COVID infected until proven otherwise. And the reason you want to get tested is not just for yourself, but for your household members and your coworkers. Because if you test positive, you can isolate yourself and prevent other people from getting infected. And if you don't get tested, that may have a very different outcome, and you could end up triggering an outbreak at work or at school or in a household setting. So I can't emphasize the importance enough of ongoing testing, and we're gonna need to continue it through the spring into the summer. When anyone develops a febrile respiratory illness, we have to make sure it's not COVID-19. That's the public health strategy in all of this. So I'll stop at that point before the KPTZ questions and ask if the commissioners had any questions.
Maybe, Greg?
Just a quick question, I guess, getting your assessment about going to phase two. In light of our declining numbers, I guess I'm feeling pretty good about, you know, getting restaurants and health clubs open at a limited capacity where we've been before. And I'm wondering if you think that that's still it's reasonable in this time period, not that we have really the authority to say one way or the other, I guess. But it sounds like a good, I'm glad we're here, and I'd love to get your analysis.
Sure. And well, I think it's reasonable as well. Especially with the case rates in the Olympic Peninsula, and it really depends a lot on what people do. It's not so much up to the restaurants as it's up to the customers of the restaurants. So if people use restaurants as a way to get together with non-household members and sit across the table, you know, unmasked for an hour or so at a time, there's real risk there. If one of those people has COVID-19, if people are very careful, however, with that, and that, you know, dining with household members is very low risk. It's you know, it's not so much the restaurant; it's the people that you're going to sit next to are where the risk comes from, and likewise the other business activities. I'm more concerned about the effect of reopening in the I-5 corridor counties, Snohomish, King, and Pierce. But we will see what the effect of that is. If that fails to trigger increased activity, that will be really reassuring that phase two is very safe. If you can pull it off in King County, then it should be way more safer for us to do. And that experiment, as it were, is running. So we will know kind of 2 weeks at a time what the effects are. But yes, I think people should feel comfortable being in public places as long as they're masked. They're masked whenever possible. And even when you're sitting at the table in a restaurant, you should be masked except when you're eating or drinking. That's the correct protocol.
Great, thank you.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Greg.
I just wanted to say thank you and reiterate your point, Dr. Locke, that now more than ever, we need to continue to be vigilant with these community mitigations. This is, as you say, a really an important time period to continue what we've been doing so well. So, thanks.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Dr. Locke, do you think the drop in cases that we're seeing nationwide or statewide have anything to do with the fact that we're getting, you know, towards the 10% of folks being vaccinated? How much does vaccination play into the drop in case numbers?
At least based on epidemiologic models, you wouldn't expect vaccination at this point to have a lot of effect. It might have some effect on transmission in healthcare settings. because the vaccination rates in healthcare settings and long-term care facilities is very high. So that's a significant effect. We think it mostly has to do with seasonality factors. You know, with each passing month or week and month, we get out of the prime time of the year for COVID transmission. It's not feeling very spring-like around here, but it is in other areas of the country. So we are getting out of what is traditionally the flu season.
You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, Washington.
Also, in many areas of the country, herd immunity, naturally acquired, is a real factor. There are probably areas like North Dakota where 40% or more of people have been infected, and that's enough to have a dampening effect. So we want to believe that people are doing a better job at masking and distancing. There are holdouts in that, but you know, studies say, you know, 80% plus of Americans are doing that kind of thing. So people are doing a lot to prevent transmission. The case rates have fallen dramatically, but they've fallen from a record high. The post-holiday peak was just huge. And so we're kind of back to where we were in early November now. And where we really want to be is where we were last summer. That was a place where we're much more able to control transmission. But the effect of vaccination will steadily increase week by week by week. More and more people will be vaccinated and sort of eliminated from the, certainly from the pool of people at risk for serious complications. And although the data is not in, we think certainly the vaccine will reduce transmission, but won't completely eliminate it. It will be possible to get very low-grade infection among the vaccinated. So it's going to, you know, until we know a lot more about that, we're going to have to keep up the various precautions. But what I'd emphasize to people, that the big argument for vaccination is it virtually eliminates your risk of developing serious illness, something that would land you in the hospital or an ICU or worse. And that's a huge benefit for a vaccine. And it appears to apply to all the vaccines, all five vaccines that we think we will eventually have by the summertime are, you know, all are very good at preventing serious disease. So, well, some KPTZ questions. First one asked, a listener said he used a wheelchair scooter and not really practical for going to the drive-through clinic. And I would agree with that. I would not try to take a scooter down a gravel road. But there will be more and more options. Pharmacies are an option right now. However, as vaccine supply increases, we'll be able to open up more and more opportunities to be vaccinated in the context of regular office visits for medical care, and the high school mass vaccination events that we're planning. They will all be fully accessible, so wheelchair whatever is needed, we'll have people who'll be able to come to the car and help people with movement and transport. So that access will get better and better as time progresses. There was a question about the variants and asking what percentage of Washington cases and Jefferson County cases and asked what the barriers were to sequencing 100% of Jefferson County samples. And it's right now less than 2% of positive PCR tests in the United States are being sequenced for the various variants. The U.S. has some of the worst testing capacity for variants in among developed countries. It's something we've never invested in. It's not a simple test. It's a much more complex test than doing the PCR testing, because you have to literally genetically sequence you have to have a virus sample that you can genetically sequence and determine whether it has any of these mutations. There is a proposal in the U.S. to get our sequencing capacity up to 5%, and that will take hundreds of millions of dollars. There's also a proposal to get it up to 15%, which would take billions of dollars. So it's a very expensive proposition. Washington State has a couple of very good labs that do it, but we are only sequencing about 2% of the virus isolates in this state, and we're targeting two main groups. One is the group what is called a vaccine breakthrough. So someone who's had two vaccines and at least 2 weeks have passed since the last vaccine, and then they still get COVID. They test positive for it. We are sequencing all of those. And then we are sequencing people who have an abnormal PCR test. So there's this kind of PCR test people can get where it's called an S-drop test, where only two of the three triggers, or they're called primers for the virus, test positive. And the third primer has an abnormal reaction. That can be a sign that it's a variant. And so those are all being sequenced as S-drop samples. But there's really no prospect that we will be able to sequence 100% of virus isolates, and certainly not in Jefferson County. So we have to depend on preventing transmission as the best way of preventing spread of the variant coronaviruses. There was a question that asked, what do we do to convince people who are vaccine hesitant to be vaccinated? And my advice is give it time. It's not unreasonable for someone to be hesitant about a brand new vaccine that has been moved very rapidly through clinical testing. But as more and more evidence emerges, that the safety profile will get stronger and stronger. We're now basing what we know on 38 million people who have been vaccinated instead of 15,000. And so far, the safety data is holding up really well. But the honest answer is, you know, we do not know about long-term side effects about something that's only been around for about 10 months. It's just impossible to know. We have a lot of, based on how other vaccines work, we have a lot of reasons to feel confident that this is a very safe vaccine. But if someone asks, you know, has that absolutely been proven? The answer is no. It will only be proven with the test of time. And so we have to keep doing the safety monitoring. But we expect that more and more people will become comfortable with vaccination. Currently, the latest opinion poll on this was that 71% of Americans have expressed an interest in getting vaccinated. And that's good. That's heading into that 70 to 80% territory that we really want to get with the vaccine. There was a question about schools and rapid testing in schools. And does that have a role? And I met with the school superintendents this morning before this meeting. We had a discussion on that. There have been several pilot projects going on in Washington State to test out rapid testing, what we call surveillance testing. So just randomly testing staff and students with the 15-minute rapid test. And the verdict is not in on those yet. They're going to publish the results of those pilot tests this month. So probably in the fourth week in February. And so we'll have a better idea. It's not looking like a magic bullet right now. Is the rapid tests are good for testing people who have symptoms of illness, but they're not as good as PCR for testing people who are not symptomatic. But as I say, we're awaiting data on that.
Dr. Locke, I think the governor's press conference this afternoon is on that very topic.
Oh, excellent. So they may be willing to, or ready to publish on that there, or to present their data. But you know, if there are protocols that have been established as being helpful, we can get rapid tests for the schools. They are available. It's just a question of does it contribute something? Because right now, we've been very successful at preventing outbreaks in the schools. So it probably makes more sense to do rapid testing in very high prevalence areas where they're having, you know, frequent outbreaks in schools as a way of preventing outbreaks. But what we're doing now has been very successful to date. And then a question asks, how is the vaccine eligibility going to work at Jefferson Healthcare, which is currently targeting people 65 or 75 years of age and older, and they did get in some first dose vaccine this week, or at least it's supposed to arrive. I haven't heard if it was not going to arrive yesterday, but it should arrive hopefully today or tomorrow, and then they can resume first dose vaccination. And they have a list of over 7,000 people who have signed up to be vaccinated. So they will be going through that list and calling people, kind of from oldest ages down. And they will work through the list. And if an older person declines, they'll just keep moving down the list age-wise. So that's the current plan. And I strongly endorse it. You know, right now, what we're trying to do with this very limited vaccine supply is save lives. And the greatest risk factor for serious illness and mortality with COVID-19 is age. So that's why that's our highest priority. A question asked, when are people fully immune after the vaccines? And the answer is 14 days. So 14 days after your second dose, you're considered fully immune. Some people probably are immune by 7 days. So it's somewhere between that 7 to 14 days, but officially we say 14 days. And if you get sick, if you get COVID-19 14 days after your second dose, we consider that a vaccine breakthrough. And as I said, we want to get a sample and sequence your virus. Although the chance of you having a variant is very, very low. We know from the clinical trials that, and we expect that about 1 out of 20 people who get vaccinated will still get symptomatic COVID. It's just that they get a much milder case of it. A question was asking you know, why is vaccine so unavailable, and are we being penalized in Jefferson County for our low case rates? The person just trying to adjust their expectations, and it's a very frustrating situation right now because the allocation situation is still chaotic. In Washington State, we do not know from week to week whose orders are going to get filled and who is not. We don't really have a state allocation plan yet that takes the available vaccine. And Washington State pretty much knows on a week by week basis how much it's going to get from the federal government. and just allocates it based on some rational formula. And we would accept any rational formula. The one that makes the most sense is just, you know, what percentage of your population or how many people do you have that are currently eligible for the vaccine? Because that number, I've done the math for Jefferson County, and Jefferson County has almost exactly 1% of the population 65 years of age and older. And so that could be a basis of allocation. And as soon as we finally have that from the state, that we know not what we might get this week, but the week after that and the week after that, then we can start telling people when they can reasonably expect to get vaccinated. But right now, Jefferson Healthcare was getting a lot of vaccine in December, in January, and then essentially got none at all for first doses for an entire month. And now it's started up again, and everyone around the state is feeling the same frustration. So we are meeting with the state, the local health departments are meeting with the state this week, and we're really pushing for one of several models to just get this allocated in a way that's predictable, and then we can plan events and start to move into the phase of this that we want to be in, where we can tell people when their appointments are going to be, and we can honor those appointments. And then finally, there was another question much like that. Just kind of expecting that you go to the state website, it tells you where to go, and feeling frustrated when you go to that website and there's no appointments available, when in fact what the state's not really telling you is your chances of getting an appointment are well below 10% if you go to one of these sites, and it's just a simple matter of lack of supply. I think the state could do a much better job of managing expectations and not telling people or implying that they're doing something wrong. If they can't find a place to be vaccinated, it's not because you're doing something wrong. It's just that there are so few appointments available relative to where the demand is. And the only thing that's going to fix that ultimately is the passage of time and more vaccine, which will come. But it's not going to be until March and beyond that we're really going to see this pick up. So that's the reality, and we have to adjust our expectations accordingly. And we have to stay safe in the meantime, and we know how to do that. That's what's gotten so many people this far, and we just have to get a little bit further before the weather will be in our favor and the vaccine supply will be steadily increasing. And with that,
we have a meeting, a hearing in 12 minutes, so could we have
I want to turn it over to Willie if there are no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Dr. Locke. Not a huge operational update from me this week. We continue to recruit volunteers, both clinical and non-clinical. On the non-clinical side, we continue to support Jefferson Healthcare's vaccine site, things like traffic control, all that kind of fun stuff. So we've had a lot of volunteers put in a lot of hours there, and we really appreciate that. And then on the back end, we continue to recruit and start to organize a volunteer workforce for these community kind of mass vaccination events. So you'll be hearing this from me, I think, every county commissioner briefing until we're finished. We appreciate all the volunteers who have stepped up. We continue to solicit volunteers. Again, we're going to be in this for the long haul. So whether or not you step forward now or step forward a month or two from now, we're going to need all the help we can get. So don't hesitate to reach out to us, offer up your skills. You can be a retired healthcare provider with an active or inactive license here in Washington. You can just have a lot of energy and enthusiasm and be ready to work. We're looking for all sorts of different skill sets. So don't hesitate to reach out. And again, this is going to take a really large community response. So we're grateful from the support of the community thus far. We continue to operate our call center to help folks sign up for their vaccination appointments. Jefferson Healthcare's vaccine page continues to be the best page to go to for information on the vaccination effort locally. And we're going to be updating that specifically Wednesdays and Fridays with the most up-to-date information. When they listen to some of the community feedback around the kind of stress and chaos of needing to find, right, they have more first dose vaccine, they'll have to rush to the webpage to get in line. And now there is an opportunity for you to go to that page, as Dr. Locke said, sign up for a notification of when your turn comes so that they can go and prioritize folks based on age and go down the list and notify you when your appointment time has come rather than you look for it. So I encourage everyone over the age of 65, go to that webpage. Let me pull it up here real quick. JeffersonHealthcare.org/COVID-19-vaccine to sign up to get your notification when your time has come. That does require an email address. So if you don't have an email address or uncomfortable with that process or just want to talk to a real person, we continue to operate our call center. That's 360-344-9791. 344-9791, and that's staffed Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. with volunteers at the Emergency Operations Center. So give us a ring if you need a hand with anything. Those are the big things from me. I kind of do want to reflect the fact that we are in phase two. I'm grateful that we're moving along, but I feel it's really important that folks, as we go back to indoor dining and we go back to some of the indoor fitness operations, that we show kind of respect and support for our business owners by continuing to practice safe COVID-19 protocols. Because just because those things are opening again doesn't mean the risk is now eliminated. And so if you want to stay in phase two so we can continue to offer indoor dining and that kind of that critical component for a lot of our local businesses, we're going to need to continue to practice safety. That's one of my big concerns is that this opens up. We get a little loose with our safety precautions, and then we get kicked back to phase one. I know that's a big fear for a lot of local business owners. So I'm happy we're moving along, but let's continue to be mindful and continue to move forward, not backwards. So that's it for me. Wanted to get that last piece in before I open it up for questions.
Great. If I could just build on that too, Willie. I think about the what might be an hour for patrons in a restaurant sitting with friends talking and increasing their risk, that's probably 8 hours for service workers who are largely ineligible for vaccination. And so, that I think that should really be a guiding principle for all of us to think about as well. Any questions for Willie? Or Dr. Locke? Willie, while we have you, how do we do this weekend with a lot of inclement weather?
Yeah, our roads crews are just simply phenomenal. I know obviously anytime there's that kind of inclement weather, I'm originally from California. I'm not very comfortable driving in that kind of stuff, and I know we have some local folks. We had a handful of accidents due to the weather, but for the most part, this event was an interesting one in that we got a decent sized amount of snow. I know it ranged anywhere from 2 or 3 inches to 6 to 8 other parts of the county. But our roads crews were able to stall pretty heavily beforehand. Thursday and Friday, they had some time to prepare and to get out there. We had that initial event, and then it warmed up really quickly. A lot of folks on their morning commutes, I'm sure you saw that. We had some bits of snow lying in kind of open fields and in the trees and stuff, but for the most part, it warmed up pretty rapidly starting Saturday night. And it's for the most part gone. So our roads crew did a phenomenal job. This was just kind of a taste. We've had more significant snow events in years past. But really, I can't give enough kudos to our roads crews, our public utility district folks. This was for the most part relatively painless. But always a good reminder that, during COVID, a lot of folks and we have a lot of attention focused on the pandemic. We still have inclement winter weather here. We still have the opportunity for long-term power outages, the bridge can close for long periods of time. And we're seeing things like that in Texas specifically right now, where folks have been without power for well over 24 hours in sub-freezing temperatures. So we're relatively fortunate, brief event, not a lot of major long-term impact. But it should be a reminder for folks, if you haven't already, stock up your emergency kit, talk with your family about being prepared, et cetera, et cetera.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.